The Russian and Ukrainian armies have burned through many of their best soldiers in the past year. The problem for Ukraine is that Russia still has far more troops. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports from Ukraine's Donbass region.
Max is a Ukrainian sniper. This morning, he's oiling his rifle to AC/DC outside his reconnaissance team's safe house in the city of Kramatorsk in the east of the country. The team was operating in enemy territory the night before. They cleared a trench of six Russian troops that a fellow soldier had killed with a machine gun. The contents of the Russians' backpacks now lie on the ground outside the safe house.
Pairs of socks, a magazine for an AK-47, two magazines, a grenade, several grenades. It's like just a little rubber band. Oh, these are just really terrible tourniquets. They're such poor quality. They're just little rubber strips.
Andriy, the team leader, oversees more than 100 recon soldiers here.
Those people that we took these things from, they were really young, really, really young, no older than 25 years old. They have been provided with nothing.
Andriy says the dead soldiers were most likely convicts working with Wagner, the Russian mercenary group. He said they wore Ukrainian-style uniforms produced in Russia. Andriy describes their general tactics.
They approach our positions saying, no, don't shoot. We are your people. This is how they try to get close to us. Our soldiers start to think, okay, it's our camouflage, so maybe it is our people. Until the last moment, in the case last night, they didn't know whether they killed their own or Russians.
So how are you sure that it wasn't your own people?
We found their radios, their phone, Andriy says, which were Russian. Max, Andriy, and their teammates share a private house they commandeered. It's a mix of cozy domesticity and modern weaponry common near the front. Max sleeps on a sofa with a stuffed bunny for a pillow. On the floor sits a 50-caliber sniper rifle with a giant scope. Andriy, 30, is the more cerebral of the two. He studied history of the Middle Ages at university in the western city of Lviv. As for Max, who's 33,
I was a football hooligan, and I was a farmer. This subculture of football hooligans, it's a small army. I have a feeling that my whole life, it was preparing me for this war.
Both he and Andriy, who used to make dentures for a living, joined the army for patriotic reasons after Russia invaded Crimea in 2014. Over coffee at the kitchen table, Andriy told me more about the Wagner convicts Ukraine is fighting.
They've been told you either sit in the prison or you'll get your freedom in the battlefield. They are now just used as meat. They push them in waves and waves and waves.
Max says the Russians sometimes also use new conscripts to draw Ukrainian fire to reveal their positions.
They pick the simplest way of working with less motivated troops. They push them forward under the threat of being shot. They just go until they stumble into the enemy. Then the Russians see where we are and say, let's drop artillery there.
Andriy says, although Russian conscripts aren't well motivated, their numbers are huge.
The Russian mobilizational reserve is pretty much infinite, which means that they have the luxury to make mistakes. They can lose a brigade or they can lose a platoon, and some of those people are going to survive and they can share experience with the new conscripts.
In November, the Pentagon estimated both sides had lost more than 100,000 troops each to death and injury. But Andriy says the math is on Moscow's side. Russia's population is about four times Ukraine's. And Andriy says the Ukrainian army has motivational problems of its own.
Most of the people that were ready to take guns and fight, they came in the first 2 months, and those people are coming to an end.
Andriy means they're dead. He says the quality of the new soldiers is much lower. Some of them, he tells me, they don't know how to hold a rifle. And Max says, even if they do, there's some who don't want to use it. Max recalls a time in the Ukrainian city of Soledar, about 40 miles east of here, where his team prepared an ambush.
A group of Russian soldiers were leading a column, serving as the vanguard, and I saw a man at the front with a camouflage jacket and a Russian patch on it. He looked like he was walking at the front of a parade. He didn't know we were 50 to 60 meters from him. Then some of our guys did something stupid. They shouted at him, stop!
Why did your soldiers tell him to stop?
Because you probably know the statistics, not every soldier can kill when it comes to it. Since in Ukraine there are so many Christians, up to the last moment, they will try to not take a life. The funniest thing is, after I finished off the Russian soldier with four shots to his chest and he fell down, all of our guys started to shoot.
Ukraine still vows to push Russian soldiers out of the country. President Volodymyr Zelensky had this message for those still living under occupation.
Ukraine hasn't abandoned you, hasn't forgotten you, hasn't forsaken you. One way or another, we will liberate all our lands.
The view from the front line is more skeptical. Andriy's best case scenario is this.
We can be realists, and to speak as a realist, the conflict is going to be frozen.
Max has a worst-case scenario. Russia takes the eastern half of Ukraine. After I met Max, he was injured in a firefight, taking shrapnel to his legs, arm, and elsewhere. He sent a voice memo from his hospital bed.
It was cowboy-style shooting. We started to think what to do next when shrapnel from a grenade hit my butt. Then they started to hit us with multiple grenade launchers from both sides. I crawled into the trench and they bandaged my butt. But since I was the leader of the group, I couldn't let the guys simply die. So I took a rifle and I started firing back.
This is the first time Max has been wounded since he began fighting the Russians nearly 9 years ago. He says he doesn't know how long he will take to recover. Frank Langford, NPR News, Kramatorsk.